The irony, though, is that if they succeed, if they actually do tear this country down, dismantle it as they want to, then the luxury and freedom and comfort that they take for granted really will disappear. And they will finally get the authentic version of the oppression that they so desperately want.
Matt Walsh speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Unless we as the rational, we as the moral, we who understand objective truth, objective morality, unless we stand in the way for their sake and for our own.
You can watch and listen to Matt Walsh's presentation, Making the Case Against Woke Culture, with a recording of the 2020 Making the Case conference. We'll send you links to download a podcast and watch a video stream for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Well, Japan Airlines is the latest airline to announce a decision to use gender-neutral titles when addressing its customers, whether you're waiting for the plane or whether you're on the plane. No more ladies and gentlemen. Now, why is this decision, as small as it seems, important? How does the LGBTQ framework presuppose something like men and women, ladies and gentlemen, male and female, that gender binary? And isn't someone free to believe something about himself or herself that's completely wrong? What if they want you to believe it too? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to talk about Japan Airlines' decision to use gender-neutral titles. Glenn Stanton joins us. He's Director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family, author of several books, including his latest, The Myth of the Dying Church, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, Airline Eliminates Sex-Specific Greetings to Passengers. Here's Why It Matters. Glenn, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Thanks. Good to be with you.
Describe this new policy that's being adopted by Japan Airlines and other airlines.
Well, it's pretty simple. Japan Airlines announced, starting October 1st, which was just earlier this week, that no public address in terms towards passengers of Japan Airlines employees, like, you know, when you're in the terminal and they're calling all the passengers to load or things like that, that they would not use the term ladies and gentlemen to get everybody's attention, or ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our flight. Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to land. That they would employ rather, you know, gender neutral terms like everyone or, you know, dear passengers, things like that. And they explained that the reason that they were doing this so that all passengers would feel included. And that brings up the question, okay, what passengers are those that are not included in the general greeting of ladies and gentlemen? And that's my point, is that everyone who ever flies on Japan Airlines and ever will is, or will be one day as they grow up and mature, a lady or a gentleman, hopefully.
So how is this new policy, as small as it seems, in your opinion, significant?
Yeah, I mean, it is small, right? It's just simply how they're speaking into the public address system to address their passengers. And you think, okay, Glenn, why get all worked up about this? Well, words matter, and how we address one another matters, and especially in our public spaces. This is very significant. I mean, if it weren't a significant thing, they wouldn't have changed it. They understand the power of words. And for a company, a major international company, Japan Airlines, okay, how many of us are ever going to fly on Japan Airlines? Well, it's not so much the issue of that, but their position in the world as a major corporation saying, yes, no, it's rude, if you will, to refer to people as ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we have to stand up against that and say that no, calling somebody a lady or a gentleman, one, is biologically true, and two, it's a virtuous statement. It's an honorific statement to say ladies and gentlemen is an ideal. As I say in the article, you're going to take a 13-hour flight from Tokyo to New York. Would you rather be sitting by a man for that 13 hours or by a gentleman, by a woman or by a lady for those 13 hours? And as I say in the piece, if you don't know the difference between just a man and a gentleman, the difference will reveal itself over the hours of that 13-hour flight. I mean, again, ladies and gentlemen is an aspirational kind of thing. And we should not think, we should not accept, we should not settle that, no, those words cannot be uttered in public because it may make somebody feel bad about themselves.
How does the LGBTQ construct itself require the male-female binary?
Well, see, that goes back to the reason that they adopted, you know, we're not going to say ladies and gentlemen because of non-binary individuals. And my point is, non-binary doesn't even exist. It's a figment of people's imaginations. And I say in the article that the LGBT configuration itself requires the binary. Let me explain, okay? Pretend you're your first day of gender studies class, and the professor is starting the class, and he's going to say, let's talk about LGBT, L and G. That means lesbian and gay. That means lesbians are women who are sexually interested only in women. So we think, okay, well, gosh, we just learned that, no, there's a whole spectrum of genders. Are there any other genders that can be lesbians? The professor says, nope. Just women, and they're just interested in women. Who are they not interested in? They're not interested in men. So binary. So the L and the G are very binary. They involve men who are interested in men and women who are interested in women. There's no other thing there. There's no other option. There's no other third category. Now you look at the B. They don't call it bisexual for nothing. It's binary. It's either this or that. And then the trans. The trans is a two-way highway from male to female, female to male. So think about that. Even the LGBT construct itself requires and is built upon the binary. And if you don't have the binary, you can't understand the LGBT configuration.
How does this policy, in your words, deny the human essence of airline customers?
Well, it asks everybody to play along with an illusion. And as I'm very careful in the article to say that everybody, you think about just the process of going through an airport. You have a passport. That passport operates off your birth certificate, which is marked either male or female. Your passport is going to be marked male or female. Now, there are some people in the last couple of milliseconds of human history that have lobbied to get their passport marked non-binary. It's not a medical or scientific designation. It's a political designation marked non-binary. Now, when you go, you show your passport, you go through security. If you require extra screening, the TSA professionals there are going to be very keenly aware when they need to pat you down whether you're a male or a female, and they are going to process you accordingly. If you're a female, they're going to have a female pat you down. If you're a male, likewise. If you're quote-unquote non-binary, they're going to ask you what you're comfortable with. Which of our TSA professionals would you like to have? I mean, the ladies and gentlemen thing is very huge to the security people. Now, every passenger that boards a Japan Airlines plane flight, they have doctor certificates, they have doctor's records, and their doctor sees them not as non-binary, but as a male or female body. It misses this idea, and it pretends that this idea doesn't exist, that to be human is to be gendered. And the only two options for that are male and female. And no bit of wishful thinking is going to create another kind of alternative or other reality. And that is why things like this must be stood against. I mean, it's madness for everybody to think, oh, yes, it's completely reasonable not to call people ladies and gentlemen because not everybody is a lady or a gentleman. I mean, that is sheer illusion, and it's madness.
So is that why you have said that for the human species, non-binariness simply doesn't objectively exist?
non-binariness does not exist. As I say in the article, if you ever meet anybody who says they're non-binary, and I have for years spoken on college campuses, I meet people like this all the time because they'll come up and they'll say, well, Mr. Stanton, I'm about to blow your mind. You're going to meet a non-binary individual. And as I say in the article, you know, the only quote-unquote non-binary individuals that I've ever met is somebody who is physically a male, but they present as a female or vice versa, or they're an individual who just presents androgynously through their social cues, by the way they fix their hair, the way they dress, the way they do their makeup, and things like that. And non-binariness exists only in a person's own self-conception. It doesn't exist in objectivity. I mean, God forbid, I don't mean this, but if you were to do an autopsy on an individual, they don't look at the body, they don't observe the body, and they don't say, you know, or check off, oh, this is a non-binary individual. It's a psychological construct, purely. And again, it does not exist in objective nature. And pretending like it does, again, is just an exercise in madness.
Go into a little more detail in something you said a few moments ago, that the transgender idea, the claims of transgenders, fundamentally conflict with the idea of non-binary gender.
Yeah, and I use this illustration in my talking. Okay, if I'm in a gender studies class and I said, Professor, can I bring for show and tell tomorrow a genuine transgender friend of mine? The professor will be delighted. Yes, you know, bring them in and we can talk to them and we can interview them. And then he'll ask me, is he or she an MTF or an FTM? That means male to female, female to male. You know, and he doesn't even, as he's asking that question, realize that he is honoring the binary. People do not trans from their biological maleness to a third, fourth, fifth, sixth different kind of gender. I mean, just think about that. You never see that. It's always the person trans is, if you will, from male to female or female to male. It is a binary two-way street that lives according to nature, basically. And it says, I'm physically, biologically male, but I don't identify as the male that I am. I identify as female. Again, there are no other non-binary options there. And so again, the LGBT, especially the trans and the bi, they support, they are worked into, baked into a binary system.
Someone might ask, aren't intersex people, the very small number of people who are born genuinely intersex, aren't they non-binary?
Well, and see, and that's what I talk about, because I hear that question all the time. Like, Mr. Stanton, well, you don't know about intersex people. Well, I do know very well about intersex people. Intersex people, that's a whole other thing. Intersex is an objective reality. Intersex, it's a complex thing, but it really is simply a physiological maldevelopment where either physically or genetically a person doesn't develop clearly to give indications of their clear maleness or femaleness. It's not that they're a third gender. The Intersex Society of North America, an advocacy group for intersex organizations, they do not believe that we should de-sex or de-gender culture. They do not believe that being intersex is a third, fourth, or fifth kind of gender. They say it's an ambiguity of the person's maleness or femaleness. So no, intersex is a real, objective, measurable, physiological phenomenon that happens with 0.018% of the population. So again, like our discussion on abortion, they'll use these extremely rare examples to try to confound the rule, and that's what they do here with intersex.
Finally, someone may also ask, doesn't someone have the right to believe something about him or herself that is wrong?
You know what, Todd, that is a great, great point, that yes, we all have a right to believe whatever we want about ourselves. I don't mean this flippantly, but pretend you have a neighbor and he truly believes he's Santa Claus. what you would do with that neighbor. He's a nice guy. He doesn't hurt anybody. You'll probably even play along with him. You know, Santa, it's your busy year coming up. You know, hope everything's fine. But to demand that somebody play along with that, which is what we're doing in public policy today. I mean, you can lose your job if you just misgender somebody with a pronoun and refuse to do that. It's one thing to believe something about yourself that is contrary to reality and nature. It is a whole other thing to construct a system that requires everybody else to play along with your illusion. And Jordan Peterson, I mean, his big long fight in academia of saying, I will not play that game. He was fighting that not because he didn't want to be sensitive to others. He was fighting it because of the force of the use of language, which is a totalitarian kind of thing that we simply cannot cater to. We can't acquiesce to it.
Glenn Stanton is director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Myth of the Dying Church, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Airline Eliminates Sex-Specific Greetings to Passengers. Here's Why It Matters. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Glenn, thanks.
All righty, Todd. Thanks, man.
Well, until recently in the Episcopal Church, they had rights for same-sex marriage, and they were considered optional. Apparently, they aren't optional anymore. They're now mandatory. An Episcopal bishop has been found guilty of opposing same-sex rights. We'll talk about it with Bishop Keith Ackerman, former bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Quincy, Illinois, next.
Girls will be boys and boys will be girls. It's a mixed up, muddled up, shook up world. It's a
What's the relationship between the Book of Proverbs and the Ten Commandments? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Provoking Proverbs, Wisdom, and the Ten Commandments. It's a new 10-lesson Bible study produced by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number 1-800-325-3040, or read an excerpt of Provoking Proverbs at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Provoking Proverbs, Wisdom, and the Ten Commandments. 1-800-325-3040.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive word and sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at siestakeyrentalgenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.